On today's show, we're going to be talking about a little bit about the album because it just came out. Also going to be talking about an interview that Bono gave at the Washington National Cathedral, which I think you might find interesting, and also an interview that Adam gave for RT Television a few years ago when he was interviewed by the comedian Tommy Tiernan. Welcome everyone to another episode of the With or Without U2 podcast, a U2 fan podcast for U2 fans. So today I got a message from producer Nick saying that I need to record an episode now. Producer Nick is lovely, great guy, very accommodating, decent guy, and I have been remiss in recording an episode. And I'll tell you why, because there's a lot happening. Okay, we worked really hard for the first 3 weeks to get any content out, and now sort of settling in, seeing how people are reacting to things that we recorded, and also it's just impossible to keep up with everything that's going on. I guess in some ways this is the world that U2 have always waited for. One of my favorite lines from any U2 song is in Kite, where the lyrics are, "The last of the rock stars, when hip-hop drove the big cars, in the time when new media was the big idea, that was the big idea." New media, this is what U2 have aspired to for a long time. They write about it here, and often when I think of U2, I think of the new media experience they want to create. They are usually the first band to utilize new techniques and new channels, new media channels, to create the experience on and off the stage with and without their albums, which is fascinating. They are a new media, a multimedia band. They created a multimedia experience, and now the world is finally caught up, because what we're seeing now is a complete onslaught across multimedia channels, across different types of content, different mediums, different platforms, and delivering multiple versions of their songs on multiple album vinyls, as well as their interviews with Zane Lowe, their interviews in Ireland with people like Dave Fanning, and their interview with David Letterman. They're just, they're everywhere. To talk briefly about Songs of Surrender, I suppose it's becoming more and more apparent that this is a greatest hits record. The last time they did that was in the late 90s, I think, and then early 2000s, which was a great album. I remember playing that over and over again when I was living in the Netherlands, as well as the album All That You Can't Leave Behind. These were a reminder of just how good this band was. And at the time I was living out of Ireland, I think possibly helped, because if we do one thing really well in Ireland, it's big, and I'll come back to that later. But yes, this is effectively a greatest hits album with a twist, as only U2 could do it. That does make it somewhat unique, although Snow Patrol did do something similar a few years ago. Snow Patrol, if you're not aware, sure all the hardcore fans are, toured with U2 in the United States of America, maybe Canada. They did a reimagined rework album, and they did concerts in places like the Usher Hall in Edinburgh, which were very intimate affairs. And I suppose when I heard this, I thought, oh, that's what we can look forward to. But I think it's a rarity to get that intimate. I think the most intimate we can get is playing this in our own homes. And yeah, there's some of the songs on there that I hate, and I will discuss those later, and that's fine. You know, I've said, and I'll repeat if you didn't hear before, I don't need U2 to be successful. I don't want U2 fans, all U2 fans, to be pleased with what they're doing at any given time. And I think if you look at the history of what they've done, they haven't tried to maintain the appeal with their existing fan base. They have always experimented, tried new things, and taken big risks. And as an Irishman, I think that's very much part of our culture. We are rebels. We have something in us that wants to destroy what we have, or at least take the risk of destroying it. So in a lot of ways, this is very much an album for the Irish and for their roots. And for, I think I mentioned in one of the previous podcasts, that while they have some great songs, they're not always that easy to sing in late at night, after hours, after a night out with a group of friends. when you're in your 20s. Maybe this is part of what they're trying to do here. Who knows? Fans out there will be aware that there's been a lot of negative comments from longtime U2 fans and in the U2 conversations on fan sites and Facebook pages, etc., that this album is not up to their standards, not welcome. They don't like it. And I've really tried to understand a little bit and not be dismissive of that. I'm not dismissive of that in any way. I'm very eager to understand why people dislike it. I personally like a lot of it, but I could just have easily have hated it. It would not necessarily have been a bad thing for me to hate it, because I'm fascinated more by this band from Ireland, these guys from Ireland that have taken on the world and for the large part succeeded. But let's explore maybe why, or at least why I think people dislike this album and the songs. I think the first part is that they have a historic association with those songs, and any tampering with that affects, has tarnishes that historic association. They don't want to hear other lyrics. They don't want to think about it in any other way. They prefer to retain the purity of the song and for it to be completely unchanged. And I get that. And I can understand that and appreciate that. Then there are other U2 fans who maybe feel that this album and the rework songs tarnish U2's credibility. And in doing so, the fans' credibility for putting so much time and energy into being a U2 fan. And I can definitely understand that. You've invested so much and taken a lot of flack, defended band, defended the individuals, defended the group, defended their music, defended their choices. This could be something that's used as a stick to beat you with. So I totally get that, and I'm very sympathetic. The third set of people, of the dislikers, are really quite just angry people for other reasons. They want to be heard. They want to be in control in some sense. They are a little bit angry, a little bit upset. Maybe things in their life haven't gone as well as they want, and they're taking it out on you too without any real justification. Maybe they're even just following the trend. I have seen some people who initially despise the songs or individual songs or clips have come back and said they now like it, so that's good. I'm not trying to judge any of those groups. I'm just trying to get a clear idea in my head, major reasons why some people dislike these albums and this song. Again, for me, it's more of a very Irish album, because we in Ireland love a bit of begrudgery. And if I was to be drawn on it, I would say that actually you two understand that begrudgery and use it to their advantage. While we begrudge, we also have to begrudgingly give credit where we go, "Ugh, that these guys, they've only gone and done it again." And actually, even if we dislike the songs, dislike the band, dislike Bono and all the rest, we still probably go, we are capitalists in Ireland. No matter how bad the quality of something from Ireland is, if it's a commercial success, we still want to be giving it some degree of credit. And that's why I say that I think you two use the begrudgery to their advantage. And the begrudgery maybe drives them on a bit too. They want to hear a little bit of negativity. They want to, and they've played with that, teased it, maybe tried to get people to dislike it or bring the dislike out, because ultimately that's what you got to do. I mean, that's something they've always done. So again, I think they fit very neatly into a modern social media echo chamber, comment driven. You need negative and positive comments to drive the conversation world that we live in today. That's all I'm going to say about the Songs of Surrender album for now. I want to talk about two other things, as I mentioned at the start today. Two interviews that were given, one quite recently, and the last one was from a television show that's broadcast in Ireland. But of course, most of these things are available on the internet. Someone shared this interview on one of the Facebook pages, and I took the time, as I do with any links on there, to check out what it was. Some of those links you have time to digest and others you don't. What intrigued me from the beginning of this one was the setting inside a huge cathedral. I thought, oh, this is interesting. this is a bit different to a typical interview. I wonder what this is going to be about. It was recorded on the 5th of December last year at Washington National Cathedral. What we have is an evening of conversation with the cathedral canon historian John Meacham and Bono. We've shared some of the clips on our Facebook page because I really wanted to draw attention to this interview, because it's maybe one of the most revealing interviews about Bono and the band, because the questions that are asked are very, very different to the typical questions that get asked in other interviews. For that reason, I wanted to draw it to your attention and suggest that maybe you take the time to watch it. There's bits of singing in it as well, but I think you'll really enjoy it. There are some great stories in this. I'm not sure if they are covered in the book. They are. There's a great story about Bob, his dad, almost castrating himself. I think we give the trailer to that. So again, you want to get a real feel for that story. He did do it in the live performances that accompanied the book around America and Europe, where I saw him in Paris. Pretty sure he did it then, but of course we weren't allowed to record. And as respect of the request not to record, I've not watched any of the recordings that have emerged from fans who did record without permission. So anyway, I probably will look at them down the line, but I don't want to tarnish my experience of that night by rekindling it just yet. I think it was great to have it as a standalone. You've got to remember this. You've got to be in the moment to enjoy it fully and not share it with other people, only be able to talk about it. So anyway, really worth watching that interview if you haven't already. The other interview I want to talk about is one that Adam gave on RTE television a few years ago to Tommy Tiernan. And I think maybe some of you have also seen this interview, but may not have the full context of who Tommy Tiernan is or what that represents for the Irish people. Tommy Tiernan is a comedian in some respects. If you're aware of who Billy Connolly is to the Scots, Tommy Tiernan is a modern day equivalent of that to the Irish. When you look at Tommy's body of work, he has been accused of maybe unintentional racism and on occasions insensitivity to certain groups. To be honest, I tend to agree with that. He has lurched from stand-up to trying to figure out other ways to communicate with an audience. He did go to America, as Billy Connolly did. He did star in a comedy series there, but it never really took off, and his acting career never took off either. But he is a very accomplished, very capable comedian. He's had his issues with the drink, the demon drink, as we say, our blessing and our curse. Some might say that if the Irish didn't have the drink, they might take over the world. And the Irish people are very aware of that. He gave up the drink for a long time, and I think he's back drinking again. Doesn't want to be, like, every Irishman does not want to ever be admit or be accused of being an alcoholic, because that's worse than not drinking. There's a great skepticism by Irish people on anyone who doesn't drink or can't drink for whatever reason. The Tommy Tiernan interviews are regarded as something a bit different to the typical interview format that has existed on the national broadcaster for decades. Those other interviewers and interviews are tend to be more conservatively constructed, conservative in nature, refined. Whereas Tommy's interviews are a little bit more chaotic, experimental. You're never quite sure what he's going to ask or how he's going to ask it. There's a bit of devilment in him, as we would say in Ireland. And his guests are a little bit more unique, unusual. And the guests probably don't have necessarily anything to promote, as would happen on the typical shows. They're not quite as polished. They're more interviews with people who don't give interviews very often. And this is why the interview with Adam is so interesting. And again, I think people will get a lot out of watching it and listening to it if they haven't already. He's very revealing in that story about his battles with addiction himself, alcohol, drugs, etc. And the more I watch that and experience Adam, by the way, if you look at our Facebook page on the profile picture at the moment, there is a picture of Adam looking directly at the camera. That was Adam looking directly at me. I never got his autograph that day because that was when I was starting with or without you two. And I traveled to Berlin and I could have had, as I say, the joke is with or without you two, this week we're without you two or any of the members, but I could have actually more early on had been able to say, today we are with a member of you two, and had maybe a comment from Adam, a soundbite, etc. But at the time I was still trying to figure this out. It was 2018, I'd gone to Berlin to basically a building site, by the way. I don't know if anyone was in Berlin for that concert. If they remember, they had to cancel the second night. I'm not surprised, because my throat was filled with dust after walking around that area, and it was everywhere. Dust gets everywhere. So it was no wonder that they cancelled the second gig. It was a bit of a weird location because of all the work that was going on around it. But anyway, Adam is a true professional. He exuded a warmth and a friendliness, and I think he would have very easily have spoken to me. Indeed, he looked at the badge I had on my hat, which said with or without you too, and seemed to be intently reading it to figure out, what is that? It's not an official U2 branded merchandise, it's something else. And I think he would have been interested to know what it is. Anyway, I missed the opportunity at the time, but I'm sure another opportunity will come along one day. What I'm trying to get at here is that if I have to today pick a favorite of the band, I think it's going to be Adam. And I think it might remain Adam for a long time. Not that we should have favourites, obviously. We like them all equally. I like Adam's story, the biggest rebel of them all, the biggest Irish rebel that's actually English. If there's one thing we like as Irish people, it's to hate the English openly, but embrace them when they come and help us out or do something of significance. There are a few great Irish Englishmen in our history, and Adam's one of those. I think he provides that bit of devilment to you two that was the right yin to Bono's spiritual faith yang that enabled the band to work together from early on and throughout. So I'm glad I got the chance to highlight these interviews to you, and we will continue to do that, as well as talking about Songs of Surrender, as well as talking about Surrender the Book, as well as talking about the upcoming gigs and everything else that's happening. But I hope you've enjoyed this little conversation. I can send it now to Nick, say yes, I've recorded the next episode. I hope you like it. There may be some little bits that we need to add in afterwards, but I will converse with Nick over the next few hours, days, to ensure that this goes out as high quality as all of the rest have so far. Thank you for listening, and as Nick would say, stay U2-nited.
And that's it for our episode this week. If you want to be featured on our episodes, make sure to hit us up at Facebook or on Discord. Until then, see you again on the next episode. And as always, stay U2-nited.